At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
My name is Christopher Allen Maloney, and this is Why This Movie, a podcast where we talk about the movies we love and why we love them. Today I'm talking with Megan Jessup, a friend and fellow writer currently residing in the Pacific Northwest. How do we know each other?
Oh gosh, we met, 2016?
I think it was 2018.
It was the Rocky Mountain Film Festival, right? In Missoula, where you and I met. We kind of connected through a podcast group years ago. And then, you posted in the group you were coming through Missoula and if anyone was open to connect and meet up. And we did. And we've kind of been close friends and stayed in touch ever since.
Yeah.
And good.
That's all correct. I had to fact check you on the year, but I think it was 2018. It was the Big Sky Documentary Festival.
Yeah.
To this day, it's still my favorite film festival I've been to.
Oh, that's awesome. It was good. I think I only sat through your documentary, the In God We Trump documentary that you submitted for the festival, but very profound, very eye-opening. And then, I do remember being very impacted by your little film.
My little film, thank you.
Your little film. Well, it felt short to me. Maybe it wasn't quite so short. I don't know. Your documentary.
Yeah. So what movie are we talking about?
We are talking about the Dead Poets Society.
In 1989, Robin Williams appeared in the coming-of-age drama about an English teacher who inspires his students in Dead Poets Society. Directed by Peter Weir, it concerns the students of the all-boys school called Welton Academy in New England of the late 1950s.
Gentlemen, what are the four pillars?
Tradition, honor, discipline, excellence.
Banners up.
Welton Academy for Boys, a breeding ground for the future leaders of America. An institution dedicated to achievement, virtue, and conformity. A school whose rigid standards are upheld by every single teacher. Except one.
Come on, Mr. Overstreet, you twerp.
Mr. Anderson,
are you a man or an amoeba?
Language was developed for one endeavor, and that is...
to communicate.
No!
To woo women.
Mr. Keating.
Some people like to rock, some people like to roll, but moving...
The film seemed tailor-made for Robin Williams, allowing for moments of improvisation and diversions away from the script. This shows up in the series of lectures he delivers as Mr. Keating.
Today we're going to be talking about William Shakespeare.
Oh, God.
I know. A lot of you look forward to this about as much as you look forward to root canal work. We're going to talk about Shakespeare as someone who writes something very interesting. Now, many of you have seen Shakespeare done very much like this.
Oh, Titus, bring your friend hither.
But if any of you have seen Mr. Marlon Brando,
no, but Shakespeare can be different. France, Romans, countrymen, Lemires.
You can also imagine maybe John Wayne is Macbeth going, well, is this a dagger I see before me?
The main theme of the movie is hit home over and over again by Mr. Keating in his class sessions with these impressionable high school boys, students who have heretofore lived in convention and conformity. In this scene, Mr. Keating uses a poem by Robert Herrick to make a point.
Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. The Latin term for that sentiment is carpe diem. Now, who knows what that means? Seize the day.
Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Why does the writer use these lines?
Because he's in a hurry.
No! Ding! Thank you for playing anyway. Because we are food for worms, lads. Because believe it or not, each and every one of us in this room is one day going to stop breathing, turn cold, and die.
He directs the boys to turn their attention to photographs of boys from previous classes, former students who have long since graduated, lived their lives, and died.
They're not that different from you, are they? Same haircuts, full of hormones, just like you. Invincible, just like you feel. The world is their oyster. They believe they're destined for great things, just like many of you. Their eyes are full of hope, just like you. Did they wait until it was too late to make from their lives even one iota of what they were capable? Because you see, gentlemen, these boys are now fertilizing daffodils.
At this point in his career, Robin Williams was showing what he could do as a legitimate actor. Before Dead Poets Society, he had received an Oscar nomination for Good Morning Vietnam. With this movie, he received another. The film was a commercial and critical success and took home an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. All right, so let's start at the beginning. The movie came out in 1989. Which I know was, you can't have seen it when it first came out. So when
I was
were
a year
you,
old.
Yeah, exactly. When were you first aware of it?
Early, oh, I want to say probably 2009 probably. Again, timeline gets blurry, but I was actually in Bible school at the time. And it was my Bible school mentor that showed me the film for the first time. And I just remember being like very, like, I don't know, emotionally impacted by it, I guess, and like really enjoyed it. But yeah, just the whole like plot line of story and everything. I've seen it so many times since then. Definitely left an impact on me.
What was it about the story that impacted you so much?
I think part of it for me at the time when I first saw it was the season of life that I was in. I was just like kind of starting to go to like transitioning from Bible school into undergrad. And I was taking a Latin course. So there were things about the movie that seemed to kind of parallel my life that I found very intriguing. And I've ever since middle school-ish, I've kind of been a poet nerd myself. So like really appreciated a movie that was kind of like taking this more intellectual, like kind of artsy approach to some of the things that I think often get overlooked in education as like valuable.
Yeah. Like, what do you think sometimes gets overlooked that the movie didn't overlook?
Well, like poetry is something that's like, yeah, sure, we teach poetry and we might talk about certain poets and stuff, but I've always kind of felt like in the public school system, at least, is that it's like, oh, this is part of the curriculum. Like, we'll talk about this stuff. And it's kind of like, okay, whatever, check the box, moving on kind of thing. And I just really appreciated Mr. Keating, is Robin Williams' character, his approach to like really diving into the poetry and like making it applicable to these boys. Like, this is what this means. This is like, you know, he talks about the Dead Poets Society as a club that he had when he was back, you know, when he was a student back at that preparatory school, and like the club that he had that like wrote and recited poetry and the meaning that that had for them, and then how he could pass that torch on to them, which I thought was really beautiful and profound. Is like the way that Mr. Keating's, Robin Williams' character, the way that he taught it, the way that he taught poetry is a way that I'd never seen it taught before. Oh. Like he went deep with it. And oftentimes I feel like it's just brushed over in the public school system.
Were you already writing poetry at that point?
I was, yeah. I've been writing poetry, seriously writing poetry since high school.
Do you think that the movie could have... Okay, so why do you think the filmmakers chose poetry to be the subject that Mr. Keating taught?
I think poetry is sort of the cousin of like music, for instance, or like it's an art form in itself. And I think there's a sense of it that speaks to the heart that is in a way universal, like music is universal, right? Mm-hmm. And like when you look deeper at more than just the words and you get to like the heart of like what the author or the speaker of the poem is trying to say, mm-hmm. then there's a lot about a lot of poetry out there that can really help us like look inside of ourselves and see that strength and that power that we hold and how it can be sort of a guidepost to living our most authentic lives. And I think that was really portrayed well in the film.
Medicine, law, business, engineering, these are noble pursuits and necessary to sustain life. But poetry, beauty, romance, love, these are what we stay alive for. To quote from Whitman, "O me, O life, of the questions of these recurring, of the endless trains of the faithless, of cities filled with the foolish, what good amid these, O me, O life?" Answer, that you are here.
Do you think that it could have anything other than poetry? I guess music you mentioned, but could there have been any other subject that Mr. Keating could have taught that would have worked for the movie? Or like, I mean, because could he have been like a dance teacher or like a drama instructor?
Yeah, I definitely think he could have. To me, it's just like art in any capacity probably could have spoken to a lot of those same themes. But I think there's the layers of like the poems and the poets that were chosen in the film add like that added layer of like the book that they use for the Dead Poets Society to like record the minutes and everything in it for their meetings has a quote from Thoreau where it's like,
"I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life."
I'll second that.
"To put to rout all that was not life, and not when I had come to die, discover that I had not lived." And Keating's marked a bunch of other pages.
Are there teachers that come to mind that inspired you the way that the students in the movie were inspired?
My freshman English teacher in high school, just because she made it very clear that she cared about you as an individual more than she cared about, like she cared about the classes and she cared about what she was teaching, but she cared about you as a person too. And that really spoke to me in high school. And then my high school, like it was the speech drama and debate coach and the speech teacher and creative writing teacher. And he, I would say it was one that probably his writing style was to like just, or not writing style, his teaching style, sorry, rather was to take like popular movies or books and just like pick apart the plot line and pick apart the layers of it in an effort to teach like what a story arc is, what, you know, like what a plot can look like, the different story structures that are out there. And I'm sure he did it with other students too, but I just remember with me particularly, he took me aside on several occasions and was like, "Oh, I have this book that I think you'll really appreciate. You should read it. Like just for funsies on your own time, like here, take this book and read it." And like, I really enjoyed that and really appreciated that, that he like really fed into that curiosity and that passion.
My 10th grade English teacher, Mrs. Woodruff, she, you know, she was using, we were analyzing literature and we were learning things about sentence structure and grammar and so forth, but she made every lesson about the importance of being a nonconformist. And she used that term all the time. Yeah, that had a profound impact on me. And if there were things that I remember once we were taking like a standardized test, and she was helping administer it, and she was like, guys, I'm really sorry, but we do have to follow these directions. I know that I've taught you about being a nonconformist, but in this case, I am going to ask you to just follow A, B, and C. I mean, like, she seemed to agonize over getting that across to us, how important it was to think for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that was, even now, I think often about the impact she had on me and decisions I've made that maybe didn't make a lot of sense to the people around me, mm-hmm. that I felt like if she knew about it, she would always be in my corner.
I love that. I love having that, yeah, that voice. But because honestly, I think that's part of the reason it impacted me so much to having seen it in Bible school, because my Bible school mentors were actually very much that kind of, you know, they were those kind of people as well that really encourage you to think for yourself, like go seek things out for yourself, find out for yourself what you believe and why, like stand on, like, don't let anybody tell you. There's a lovely quote from the movie that's like, don't let anybody.
No matter what anybody tells you, words and ideas can change the world. Now see that look in Mr. Pitt's eye, like 19th century literature has nothing to do with going to business school or medical school, right? Maybe. Mr. Hopkins, you may agree with him thinking, yes, we should simply study our Mr. Pritchard and learn our rhyme and meter and go quietly about the business of achieving other ambitions. A little secret for you. Huddle up. Huddle up! We don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race. And the human race is filled with passion.
I think that was very much kind of the spirit that Mo and Jens had like really approached everything that they tried to teach us to, of like, you can have an impact, like you're inherently valuable just in your existence on this planet. Like you can have a ripple effect on people. And just like, yeah, that like your purpose should be what you feel it is for yourself, like between you and God versus what society says it is, what your parents say it is, what they say it is, like whatever. It was just very, like that was probably my biggest takeaway from Bible school, was that sense of like, you follow your gut and you follow like what you believe to be true and you stand on that.
I wouldn't expect that to be what you took from Bible school.
Yeah. Honestly,
I wouldn't. I mean, mm-hmm. I that wasn't the message I was getting, to think for yourself and to figure things out between yourself and God. It was more like, here's what you do. Here's the right, mm-hmm. here's the right road to take. Here's the morality that you should that should be instilled in yourself, and you better follow it, or else you'll go to hell.
Right, absolutely. And I, like you and I met in like a deconstruction, like post-Christian podcast group. So you know that I've kind of like stepped away from church a bit and stepped away from some of that culture, for lack of a better way to put it. But I honestly think that because of Mo and Jens's like mentorship in that, that is part of the reason why I stepped away from the culture, because I saw so much of exactly what you're describing, of that this is the way things are. You follow a specific set of rules. You don't make waves. You fit in with the congregation. Like I've seen in a lot of cases with church, a lot of us versus them mentality. And that's ultimately kind of why I walked away from the church, was because I saw so much more of that than what I saw than what I was taught in Bible school, versus like who Christ actually was in scripture and the way that he lived and the way that Mo and Jens taught us to live. That, like, yeah, I think about that all the time, of how, like, there were a lot of things about Bible school that weren't perfect by any means. There's a lot of things looking back that I'm like, okay, that was kind of weird. But yeah, the biggest takeaway, like I said, I think about it a lot because I'm like, I just, Mo and Jens are a very special couple. And I think part of the reason they were more open to that kind of concept in their minds is because they didn't grow up Christian. They were like converts themselves. And they were born and raised in the Seattle area. So like kind of a liberal upbringing in a lot of ways. So I think that really mattered to them, that like, if you're going to follow this faith, that faith needs to be very personal and it needs to be real. So I'm forever grateful that I had the mentors and the teachers that I had, because I also, I mean, Chris, you know this, but I converted from like fundamentalist Mormonism into evangelical Christianity. So for me to have that sort of tutelage in it was a big deal. And I'm really thankful for that.
So there's a lot of talk in the movie about the phrase carpe diem, seize the day. What does that mean to you?
So it's funny, because I know I texted you not too long ago saying like, hey, I want to talk about this movie, because like, I kind of watched it and gosh, it was probably a week or two ago now that I watched it, and lots of things happened in that time. But when I, the last time I watched it, and like just the current place I'm in my life, I feel like that specific motif or like repetition of that phrase has been more impactful to me lately than it ever has been. And I think part of it's just because there's so much in the past year that has gone on in my life that have like, that has like made me feel so like uncertain and kind of unstable and just questioning so much. And there's so much these days in like the news that make you feel so uncertain and so unstable and questioning so much in general, I think on like a large scale across the board, that I was having a conversation with a coworker, and she posed the phrase, the question to me, that she's like, you know, if you lived in a vacuum and like you didn't have the cultural, religious, parental expectations, like the societal expectations that you have, like, who do you think you would be? Like, what choices would you make? What kind of life would you make? And that honestly, like, wrecked me. Like, that really messed with me. I like spent days in my journal writing about this, because I'm like, who would I be? Like, you know, there's such like unlimited potential in like that blank page kind of theory. And she also brought up that she's just like, yeah, I'm kind of a nihilist, not in a like, oh, whatever, but in a like, if I die tomorrow, like, I don't want to eat McDonald's as my last meal. Like, that's embarrassing. That's depressing, right? So she's just like, I want to make my life, she's like, I want to live in such a way that if like, you know, tomorrow's not guaranteed, it's not promised. Like, I want to live in such a way to say like, yeah, like I am proud of the way that I like lived my last day. I'm proud of the choices and the decisions I made, even if it was choosing primers over like McDonald's or whatever. Like, I want to be proud of those choices. And so like, yeah, we had that conversation around the time I watched the movie the last time, and I was like, wow, you know, there's so much to be said about that. And so much like, again, to, I'm on this like journey in therapy and healing of like what it means to live authentically, what it means to have like this courageous truth telling in your life. And there's a lot of facets of it that I'm still figuring out, but I think that carpe diem mentality and the spirit of that is so real when you're trying to live authentically in like such a way that is like, am I going to live a life with regrets that I didn't pursue this facet of something that I've always wanted to? Am I going to miss out on something in life that I didn't pursue, you know, something, and just like what it means to like be able to live with no regrets. Like, did I you know, put my heart on the line or my body on the line when it mattered in certain, you know, situations, like that kind of mentality. It's something I've been chewing on a lot, I think.
Yeah, the way I think of it is that we're all dying. I mean, we won't make it out of here alive.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, death's inevitable.
But yeah, right. Like I, but are there things? Do you have the ability to do things, say things, or take actions that will make you somehow legendary to the people around you?
Yeah.
I mean, like the no. I mean, I have regrets, and
that's fair.
Yeah, I certainly have. I think my biggest regrets are probably for the chances I didn't take, though, because I think that I've failed and screwed up so many times that I'm kind of okay with it. So, yeah, I mean, failure is okay. Not trying is not.
Yeah, I think that's an important reframing. Is like we're gonna mess it up. We're gonna fail. We're gonna, you know. Even some of I know in my past, some of my best intended, well-intended things have been some of my biggest failures. And, you know, that old adage of like the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But I think it's just like, no, like, what did you learn from that? Like what, like in taking a risk and like stepping out to like, see what happens if that, you know, I do this. I think is worthwhile. So it's less about like not failing as it is like not even being willing to take the risk, like you said.
Yeah. What would you say, like not going so much by the plot or what literally happens in the movie, but what is the overall purpose of the movie, the point that the story's trying to make?
I think the point that it's trying to make is kind of exactly like what you were saying with your teachers, like that think for yourself, you know, don't conform, you know, live authentically. Got a lot of those themes and motifs around it, especially with the setting being in such a, like, it's in a preparatory boys school, like so much tradition, so much like repression. Yeah, like it's like this is the way that the school is run for God knows how many years. This is the way it's always been done. This is the way that we're always going to do it. And for someone like Keating or Neil to come in and say like, no, we want more for this, like we see opportunity here and we're going to push for that opportunity regardless of what the cost is. And I would even go back to like what you were saying of that theme of like, I would say you could look at how the story ends and say that's tragic. It's a failure. But like the takeaway from it is like, what impact did that have? Like, what did that change when all was said and done, you know? And I think the filmmakers kind of leave that open at the end of like, it can be maybe minuscule, the impact and the change that has. It still has a ripple effect, but maybe it's one person's life. Maybe it's the school structure, like, you know, you never really know what kind of impacts things like that could make.
Do you think that the story of a human life is ultimately a tragedy because it ends in death?
No, okay. Because I was like, we could get in deep with this and talk about like what you actually believe about death, but that's a whole other podcast. But I would say no, because my perspective of like human life is like inherently valuable. And I think part of the reason I'm such a like bookish poetry nerd, art nerd, is because I like, even in college, like my science class was geology, and I love geology because it's so like based in like the history of the earth. And I think that's ultimately why, even if we all like whatever tragic end we may meet, like, or maybe not so tragic end, we all, like you said, it's inevitable that we will all end. So it's what stories were you able to tell? Like, what impact did you leave? Like, what are your, what's the next generation going to say about you? What are the people that knew you in this life going to say about you? Like, are they going to be positive stories they're going to tell? Are they going to be negative stories? Like, what lessons did you teach or leave? You know, it's more that, that legacy, I think, is like, regardless of how your life ends, like, what legacy are you leaving for the people that come after you?
There's an African proverb that I love. It says, when death finds you, may it find you alive.
Mm. Wow. That fits really well with the themes. I think that's really good.
Thank you for listening to Why This Movie. If you have a movie that you love that you'd like to talk about, email me at christopherallenmaloney@gmail.com and you may be featured on an upcoming show.